Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of September 5th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. And how about you? D.R. Tucker, of course, is with us. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Good to have you both here. Well, guys, the Hurricane Harvey has hit Houston. It's a climate catastrophe. It's a catastrophe in its own right. It is also a climate assisted catastrophe, which would not have been as bad without climate. But it raises multiple questions on many fronts, many topics of discussion, and really this will go on for many years. But one question is whether or not what lessons can be drawn by other cities from the from what has just happened in Houston? And of course, since we live near the Athens of America, I don't know, did you guys hear WGBH Curiosity Desk? The guy was going through all the nicknames of Boston, and I guess the hub of the universe was a satirical phrase by Oliver Wendell Holmes or something in the 1840s, but it got taken over that Boston was the hub of the universe. It was the Athens of America, but the best one was Beantown. So right here in Beantown, DR, how would Beantown survive if something like Harvey hit us? Would our beans be watery, or would we
it would be pretty nasty. You may recall some speculation that if Superstorm Sandy had just turned a different way, Boston would be basically inundated, and a couple of days after Harvey hit, there was a great segment on WGBH Greater Boston with Adam Riley and Austin Blackman, the City of Boston's Chief of Energy and Environment and Open Space, and Deanna Moran of the Conservation Law Foundation, discussing some of the risks that Boston would have from a Harvey-like storm. And at one point, Adam Riley in the interview discussed the development in the Seaport District of Boston, which would just be essentially a catch basin if something like a Harvey hit. And Austin Blackman, if I recall correctly, discussed some of the climate resilience policies that developers have to have in place. But of course, you know, you can have all the policies in the world, and all the policies in the world won't protect you if there's flooding in an area where there probably shouldn't be as much development.
And so you would say that it's not ready. I mean, Boston's not ready.
Nowhere near ready. Nowhere near ready. There's been also study reports about the Sustainable Solutions Lab at UMass Boston, which is discussing the feasibility of a hurricane barrier alongside Boston Harbor. Supposedly, this hurricane barrier would cost an estimated $10 billion, and you can imagine the sort of freakout that would occur in some portions, even in this state, if somebody proposed, you know, borrowing money or raising taxes to pay for that, even though it obviously save lives. So again, you have even here the same sort of, you know, discussion that propped up in Houston, where people for years were saying, maybe you shouldn't develop here, maybe we should take precautions. They were ignored, they were dismissed as anti-development. That was the slur being used towards climate hawks in Houston, that they were anti-development, and all of a sudden they were proven right, and the same thing may well happen here.
Well, I guess I just go ahead, Mariah.
So I was just gonna say, so Eric Holthaus in Politico basically described how Houston really was not planned with climate impacts in mind, and he said Houston's been sprawling out into the swamp. This is quote: Houston has been sprawling into the swamp for decades, and now all that pavement has transformed the bayous into surging torrents and shunted Harvey's flood waters toward homes and businesses. So individually, each of these subdivisions or strip malls might have seemed like a good idea at the time, but in aggregate, he called them, he said they've converted the metro area into a flood factory. And you know, so you kind of look at this and you compare it to the fact that a couple weeks back, Trump essentially pulled back the Obama era rules, which were to, you know, use the best available climate science to rebuild infrastructure, or I think there are three options, or require that standard projects like roads and railways be built 2 feet above the national 100-year flood elevation, or require infrastructure to be built to at least the 500-year floodplain. So, but he rolled all of that back. So it's now up to the states. And, you know, I feel like this is going to be one of those things where the states that say, okay, well, we're going to invest in this, and they're going to build, you know, the three little pigs, they're going to build the brick house, right? Mm-hmm. And then these states that don't plan for it, well, all of us in the brick houses are going to have to, you know, put money towards saving them when something like this happens, which of course we'll do, but
right.
It could have been prevented.
But what we're saying is that the concept, so I was saying a little while ago, I mean, Trump is, he's not a dead letter, right? But we got to think in a 20, 50 year timeline. So, I mean, at some point, the point I think you're making is that infrastructure, highway, and a lot of that is federal money, needs to be built with the 500 year or the 100 year lifetime perspective, right? We need to, as a philosophy, that's what we as a society should be doing. And then Obama was headed that way, and we've taken a short detour. But once the impeachment's over, maybe we can return to a sane kind of policy, right?
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice. Yeah. I don't know if that will happen.
I guess the other thing I was going to say was that here in Boston, where we started, was that it. I mean, Boston. If you ever look at a map of Boston from the 1776 is a markedly different map, right? And I'm sure you learned in school that the reason Paul Revere said one if by land and two if by sea was because either the British were all going to walk down this neck of road, which is I think now Commonwealth Avenue, right, that was 20 feet wide down to Boston, or they were going to come across from Chelsea in boats. But the Back Bay didn't exist, right, and the whole seaport didn't exist. We've filled all that land in since the Revolution, and once the tide comes in, right, we get a big storm, that's what's going to get filled. That's what's going to go first. I mean, it's so Boston is in a precarious position, and I heard on the radio how Mayor Walsh, right, who was declaring that Boston was going to find a way to be resilient against these things and start planning stuff like, escape. Well, I think they have escape routes now, but be much more conscious of what would happen in a true catastrophe of a Houston-style thing. I don't know. It's got to be done. But, I mean, it raises the question of, you know, I think that resiliency planning is great. We should be doing that. But you can't take your eye off the question of mitigation, right? In the vocabulary, there's mitigation, adaptation. Mitigation means you reduce the amount of carbon emissions that you put in the air. And this adaptation stuff means you are better able to take the punch when it comes, right? And so that's two sides of the same coin. We do need to be able to take, I can go on a rant, but I mean, a $10 billion hurricane dike across Boston Harbor, you take that $10 billion now and build, you know, a million wind turbines, you'd be a whole lot better off, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
So so Boston is not quite ready, we don't think, and that's got to be done. I guess one of the other, I think, interesting implications of the storm of Harvey is that it is likely to cost well over $100 billion to support this, right? Sandy was a $120 billion package that was eventually passed. Katrina was, I don't know, same scale, right? A couple weeks ago, we talked about cli-fi, climate fiction, and I mentioned a book called Rivers, which is a book about the future, but it is set in Louisiana, basically, Gulf Coast, sometime in the next 50, 100 years, when the area is subject to essentially a continuous hurricane, right? Think Hurricane Harvey, except it goes on for months and months and months because the storms just wander around in the Gulf, and how the whole South Coast is unlivable. That's an interesting picture, because what it does is it starts to question whether or not even a country as rich as the United States can support multiple disasters at $100 billion apiece, right? If another storm were to come in and hit Miami, right? And the hurricane season's young, right? Another storm comes and hits Miami, or one comes and hits Boston, and you're another $100 billion in the hole. At what point does, the economy, much like, not necessarily the good intent of the government, but the economy just can't handle that much money. Right? Is there a risk there, do you think?
I remember Tom Hartman discussing this years ago, the prospect of extreme weather events becoming so sustained that you could have a series of extreme weather events that does the exact same thing to the economy that the 2008 financial crash did, where you literally will have a near depression caused as a result of extreme weather events. Mm-hmm. And, for all the people who talk about how taking action to reduce emissions will somehow harm the economy, if there's one thing that would silence them for good, or at least reduce them to Baghdad Bob types, it would be that.
Right. Well, and we, unfortunately, we'd all be going down the tubes with them, right? I mean, if, mm-hmm. So I don't know. These are doomsday scenarios, but there are things that you have to recognize are possibilities, and you want the insurance policy of avoiding it by taking action in the present, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, said that, Harvey's quickly drawing. They said they have enough to support Harvey, but it's quickly drawing down disaster balances. And I think that Louisiana now has declared a state of emergency, correct?
Yep. And the storm's wandering into Louisiana, and you could get much the same kind of effect there, right?
Right. And all these 500-year, it's Harvey's the third 500-year flood to hit the Houston area in the past 3 years. So it's not a 500-year flood if it happens every year.
So Mariah, there was a little piece in the New York Times about what it means when you say a 500-year flood. And I think that you hear this stuff on the radio and not everyone, does a 500-year flood mean it only happens once every 500 years? Or what it seems to me it has more to do with the probability of something happening in any given year, right?
Yeah, I mean, so, I don't know a ton about this, at one point, I think my understanding is the 500-year flood, quote-unquote, refers to sort of the averages that they have developed to kind of predict things. And at this point, we're seeing so many of these 500-year floods that all of the percentages and predictions they used to make just kind of have to be thrown out. It's a whole new paradigm shift. I mean, the national maps that shows the wet weather, right? They had to create a new color to show how wet Houston was, because they didn't have enough colors to display that level of water in a city. So they had a whole new color added to their map.
And it seems like, so I think a 500-year flood means that the storm is of sufficient intensity and a sufficient departure from the normal that you're only likely to get one to occur every 500 years, right? And then there's a certain amount of rain that happens once a year. There's a 10-year flood. There's a flood that is likely to happen only once every 100 years. And then there's these other, and of course it gets kind of murky. But I think to your point is that if you have floods that have in the past been identified as being of a scale that only happens once every 500 years based on the science, right? That the measurements they made, the probability of that only once in 500 years, and you have one in each of three successive years. I mean, that really means that the assignment of the probability is just not true. It's not accurate. It's not a good description anymore. It's not that the likelihood is much, much higher for these extreme events, and that's exactly what climate change is, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Washington Post did an article which said the American Society of Civil Engineers, they developed their building codes based on the National Climate Assessment versus historical weather records, and there was a guy from Environmental Defense Fund who said the historical weather records are no longer accurate for predicting these. And so the American Society of Civil Engineers has to start developing building codes on different records. We need to ship those historical weather records.
So I guess the other question that comes up, and we touched on this last show, Kirsten, is what if a place like Houston is devastated, right? We've had the example of Katrina in New Orleans. We've had the example of the New Jersey coastline essentially being devastated by a storm. Now we have another example of Houston, which is going to have many thousands of houses that are unlivable because they've been flooded out and they're going to get moldy and all kinds of bad stuff. I mean, what image, what vision do we present for how that city should rebuild? Right? I mean, Mariah, you were just saying how the city of Houston, just as an example, right? Just as an example, has built more and more impervious parking lots and mega malls and highways and spread out. Should we envision a city that is denser and more, I don't know, more in keeping with it? But how do you handle all the people? Right?
Certainly in a sort of ideal world, you'd think, okay, let's rebuild a city in a sustainable way, thinking about all of these different things. And I know that I'm not sure how to say his name, but Sank Yuger. Young Turks. Oh, thank you, dear. And he said, well, Exxon's lost its infrastructure and it's going to be asking us for money to help rebuild the oil refineries that were destroyed. And so he has started a petition that says, do not give them more money to rebuild those oil refineries. And, I would think like, well, sure. Instead, can we build some renewable energy facilities out there and make Houston a model of what it looks like to rebuild in a way that is better for everyone's health will help prevent things like this happening to other places, making it a sort of, holding it up as the ideal for other places to.
Well, I think it's a great, it's a template. And now, it is kind of an interesting question, right? How you have this very specific problem, right? Every city is unique. Every city is different, right? But Houston is what it is. And how would you try to accommodate a sustainable city? And I guess I agree that, I don't want to pay for rebuilding Exxon infrastructure, right? So take that out. But if you want a city that is sustainable, what would it look like? And how would you go about getting there? And, that's the challenge. And it's the kind of, the old joke about trying to saddle a horse while you're riding it kind of thing, right? Everyone's in Houston now. Right. They have to deal with the reality of being there. But how do you move towards a future that is where you're less susceptible to this stuff? I don't know.
Georgetown, I think it's called Georgetown, Texas, which I don't know how far away that is from Houston, Texas, but they are, I believe they are 100% renewable. Maybe the mayor there could come in and give them a few tips.
Well, there's some city that I'll never find the URL, but there's some city in Kansas, I think, that had an enormous tornado go through it and basically level the whole town. And they rebuilt it all green, right, with wind turbines and homes that could withstand the tornadoes and homes that were sustainable. You only build what you imagine. So if we start imagining a Houston that is sustainable, then at least you have the possibility of building it. Right? If you don't enunciate the dream, then it's never going to happen.
Yeah, it's true.
I just said something really profound there, and you guys just missed it, right? We have to have to enunciate the dream. How much more pompous can you get than that? Anyway, folks, I think the question of Hurricane Harvey will go on for a very long time. There's lots of questions that I'm sure we'll come back to it, but we'll have to put down a discussion at this point. Again, our support, our love and support go to all the people in Houston that are trying to fight this, who are coming back. Again, we'll post the links to the ways that you can donate to support the victims of Harvey. We send them all our wishes. We'll put those links on the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find this posting on our Facebook page at /MassClimateAction. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. You also, of course, can find us on iTunes. We'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hang in there. We'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.